Join the conversation in Clare on Facebook, Twitter, or call 1850 400 964.
But we'll look back as opposed to forwards now, and with our panel we'll review the week that was. First of all, let's remind ourselves of some of the main news stories of the past few days.
So we're getting out, but we will start to negotiate and we will see if we can make a deal that's fair. And if we can, that's great. And if we can't, that's fine.
Ensuring that all the jobs aren't in Limerick City, that Clare gets its fair share of employment as well.
Are you saying that you're going to shock us and win?
Yes, I am.
It will shock Middle Ireland because we sometimes live in a bubble. The trauma inflicted on children by their parents, sometimes just staggering. Children are treated like human trash in some of these cases. I don't use those words lightly. But the narratives do not sugarcoat the barbaric treatment that some children suffer.
The basic salary for a counsellor is 16,500, and there are other areas that we get an income all right here, but in this day and age, it's a full-time job. You're at meetings every day.
Whoa! Holy f***. Cara got it. Whoa.
Go forth in the peace of God. Would you like to print out your blessing?
That is a robot priest, believe it or don't. It's called Bless You 2. Don't know what happened, Bless You 1. But it's not a fake thing, and we might try and get to that this morning with a panel. But as well as that, you heard from one of the incidents that I encountered whilst out on the bike for peace. We aired on Wednesday here in the programme. Ennis Councillor Pat Daly defending the pay for local representatives. Geoffrey Shannon, the government special rapporteur on kids, who compiled a damning report into Ireland's child protection system, published this week. Both Simon Coveney and Leo Varadkar speaking at this show yesterday ahead of today's Fine Gael leadership battle result. And at the top there, US President Donald Trump pulling his country out of the Paris Climate Accord. To discuss some of these stories and more, I'm joined in studio by Verena Tarpey, who's part of Rape Crisis Midwest, Martin Waldron, who's a business owner, Craftworks in Ennis, and Orla Vaughan, also a business owner, Kilfenora Hostel in Kilfenora. Good morning to you all.
Morning.
And thanks
morning,
very much for joining us. We hadn't intended to talk Trump. I try to avoid it as and when I can, Martin. But at the same time, when he's making world headlines this morning, just your own thoughts with regards to his announcement last evening and a politician keeping his promise?
What an absolute tit. That's what I put up on Facebook last night, and I still think it. I mean, it's so counterintuitive. It makes no sense. It's appealing to those rabid masses in America who put him in power. It's appealing to this military-industrial complex that are just that is feeding him, and he's feeding it. I mean, it's just so wrong and so bad. But it's totally, absolutely what he was going to do. So just be careful what you wish for, because you're going to get it.
But that might be how you would view it if you're against what he has done. But hang on a second, I voted him in if I'm on the other side, and this is what he, you know, he's doing exactly what we wanted him to do. I mean, a politician's keeping his word.
Look, Donald Trump said he was going to do this, so don't be surprised. But at the same time, I will reaffirm what I said at the very beginning of the question, right? It's so totally against everything that makes sense in this world at the moment. But Donald Trump is against everything that makes sense in this world. So, that's it.
Follow that.
Well, I think if you see this morning, I mean, he made a lot of promises that were outrageous, and he has tried to change a lot of Obamacare. He's gotten a lot of stuff through. He'll get this through probably, but you can already see on social media the amount of states in the United States of America and cities that are starting to take up individual negotiations with NATO on this. So, to be honest with you, I just think it's he did play to his electorate, the people that wanted the God Squad and that don't believe in climate change. But I think it's initially a disaster, but I don't think it's going to be as big. I really think Americans are going to stand up and be counted.
What it also demonstrates, I suppose, is how far environmental issues are down the pecking order. For many people, I think climate change is still seen as something that's just out there and not actually affecting us in the here and now. And a lot of people are so busy with their lives, dealing with things like healthcare, like childcare, all those issues, they don't see climate change as something that is affecting us.
To that point, I watched the three debates last year during the campaign. I don't recall climate change coming up during any of them. But I'd also say, Verena, we don't exactly talk about it a lot in this country either.
No, we don't. And it is, it's very much something that's very much down the pecking order in relation to a lot of government policies that are being implemented. And you often see a lot of these kind of global conventions where there's a lot of talking, but not an awful lot of action and cooperation between member states and between governments, which is really what needs to happen if the climate change issue is to be addressed. You've just had Trump pull out.
Yeah, you were shaking your head there.
Look, I'm giving out about Trump in America, but in Ireland we have the resources at hand, right, to ensure that we're not destroying the planet anymore. We're the windiest country in the world. We've got an abundance of water. We have plenty of solar power, even though you mightn't think it, right? And we are probably one of the worst nations in the world in terms of our progress on positive environmental change. You look around, you look to Denmark, you look to Norway, you look to Scandinavia, and they have a scenario where they've, even Germany has got a scenario where it can produce more than 100% of its requirements from environmentally positive sources. So given out about him and then looking at ourselves in the mirror, we're not that great ourselves.
We're not going to meet our emissions targets for 2020 the way things are going, for example. I think it's in an EU deal where we're falling behind where we should be.
Look, we could do it. We could invest in solar and wind over the next 5 or 6 years and meet those targets. But there has to be a change in government thinking and government policy, and it has to come also from the ground up. Like, both myself and Orla are involved in an organisation in the Burn that's a positive voice for good environmental policy from a tourism point of view. But like, you're pushing against an awful lot of sort of bad state thinking, but in some cases you are working with people and state authorities who are actually environmentally positively thinking. But we've a long way to go as a country, you know.
Is that the Eco
Burn Ecotourism Network?
Ecotourism.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, because there's a few different groups up there, and I'm always afraid of getting one mixed up with the other. But I was actually going to come to you because I recall we talked about it recently, and you made a point about the buses coming in, and it sparked a bit of conversation on the programme. But with regards to that, I wonder how different are we to the American people who voted in Donald Trump in this regard. For example, when we look to go to these talks, there's always a perception that the Irish government is looking to get exceptions for the farming lobby, for example, that we're looking to put business ahead of economy, ahead of environment.
Yeah, I think that it's just in another topic that we're going to talk about later, Tusla. It's so frustrating that our government changes so often. And we have, in the 20-odd years that I have been eligible to vote, we have been discussing the same things: health, environment, children. It's not a joke anymore. And I would, from a rural setting where I've grown up, I understand, and everybody in the village and the community understands, that unless you have sustainability in what you're doing in the environment that you are living in and surrounded by, that it will not work for the next generation. And the next generation understands that, and so on and so forth. But in an age where we are people in that make decisions are living more in concrete jungles and don't grasp the enormity of this and have a 20 to 30 year outlook and political agenda, they're not thinking further down the line. So I don't mean to be bleak, but I don't see where we're going to change this.
And yeah, the events of yesterday evening certainly would add to that particular one. You mentioned Tusla and the audit that was published this week, and Verena, just to get your thoughts on this one, we heard from Geoffrey Shannon there in the montage that I played at the top of this particular item, talking about how some children can be treated like trash in this country, and he talks about barbaric treatment as well. I mean, can it get much worse?
Yeah, his words were very strong. He always speaks in those terms, and you know, the system has failed a lot of children in the state. However, you know, when I was reading his report during the week, particularly, I felt that the issues for me are far more complex than simply putting an out of hours social care facility in place. Because, I beg your pardon?
In what way? Sorry.
Well, in that, by its very nature, a crisis occurs because a family is in chaos, and the Gardaí often have to jump in and deal with the crises. It's always at night time. there's often maybe drink involved, there's often domestic violence involved, and there's often triggers there. Mm. The Gardaí try to do their best, but even from a practical perspective, having an out-of-hours social team in place at 11 o'clock at night won't immediately solve the crises. There's even things like practical things like getting foster care places that night for three or four children. And the Garda then, the following day, there's always talk, and particularly in that report, about breakdown of communication. The Gardaí then might go off and his shift is finished at 8 o'clock the following day. Communication then breaks down. So it is a little bit more complex. I see it as being a lot more complex. And part of the issue is getting to this point shouldn't have happened in the first place, where there was that chaos in a family. In relation to his point about the way that different, the Gardaí deal with things differently, I actually support the way that Tusla try to reunite families rather than tear them apart. What they actually try to do after the chaos has occurred is maybe put in place supports for family. And I do agree with their approach in many respects in trying to unite families and allow parents to raise their children with proper supports. The problem is the supports aren't there.
And is that a matter of resources, money, manpower?
I think a lot of it is resources. And my argument would always be it shouldn't get to that point at 11 o'clock at night where the Gardaí have to take children because of safety. Mm. It shouldn't get to that point. A lot of families are struggling on a day-to-day basis with a chaotic type of lifestyle, and there aren't enough social workers or teams to try and support those families before those children are taken into care.
And you're working with Rape Crisis Midwest, which is, I know, is a different area, but you will be, as a group, dealing with families that come to points of crisis, I'm sure, from time to time. And without giving anything away, do you encounter difficulties or similar difficulties, I guess?
We do. We always encounter, the main issue for us is dealing with resources and putting in place resources to prevent things from actually happening. Education is a huge thing, especially for families with very young children, to educate them on proper parenting skills and how to deal with the day-to-day crises and issues that happen. And we find the same, yes, in the Rape Crisis Centre. A lot of the time the resources aren't there. There are long waiting lists for access to a lot of services, and that's a big issue for us.
Okay. Does it speak to, and I'll broaden it out to Martin and to Orla after this question, Verena, but does it speak to something in our culture whereby we don't take these problems seriously enough?
It's like the broken biscuits. These children are often seen in society as being the broken biscuits, and they're the ones that are left, and people keep taking little bits of biscuits, and that's often the analogy that we use. People have failed children that need support, and society and people in society that need support, they're the broken biscuits that are left on the counter and virtually ignored in some ways.
And you should say, Martin, that look, that's not good enough, that shouldn't happen, we shouldn't have this situation in a what is still a relatively wealthy country in the 21st century, but you can point to so many other examples where the systems that are in place to protect the most vulnerable just simply don't work.
The systems are in place, the agencies are in place, you've got a multi-agency approach now with this Tusla, but agencies don't talk to each other. And I think there was a key thing in the report that said that the police or the guards were, their system wasn't matching up. Their people weren't linking in. It's like there's institutional silos, right? The guards work in their own brief, and that's it. They should be working together in this. And these things don't just happen at 11 o'clock at night. There's a whole history, and as you said, they've got chaotic backgrounds, chaotic families. They're already known to the authorities, right? So, multi-agency approach. People talk to each other's agencies, work together on this, and then you hopefully you can make some progress. But as Arla said, this isn't happening today or yesterday. This has been going on for generations, right? So you need to have a fresh approach, an approach where all these government agencies are trying to work together for the end approach.
Why is it going on? Why is it happening for generations, for decades?
Listen, I can't answer that in the next 2 minutes, right? Mm. There's always been an issue in terms of children being neglected, right? You go back over generations. It keeps coming up time and time again. Mm. The same problems, the same issues. There's two start trying to have a new approach to it. This is a starting point, right? Take the report, listen to it very clearly, and please, please, please implement it quickly. And that will start to solve some of the issues that are coming up.
Do you want to try and answer that question? Why do we continually lay them down?
Well, I just wrote down the words easy target. And I think people that are vulnerable in our society, like people with disability, children and older people, that we do hear cases of them being abused in care or abused at home, they are easy targets. If somebody is in an abusive relationship and the abusive partner is gone out for the night and you take a couple of drinks, you may take it out on the child or children that are at home. I think it's very... depressing listening to Farina, to be honest with you. It seems like we need a two-tier system, that we really need to go back and see how we are abandoning people in our society who need help, and that's the children as well as the families and maybe the abusers. Maybe the abusers were abused. You know, this is apparently can happen quite a lot. And have a system. And I disagree that it you know, that this isn't happening at midnight or whatever, but if you see all the calls to Childline, not all the calls, the majority of calls to Childline are made after midnight on weekends. This is when, so then you look at Tusla and you say, okay guys, we have a budget of this much. From Tuesday to Thursday, we don't get that many calls, but we have to start organising accommodation for people and prepping what's going to happen from midnight on Thursday to midday on Monday. Because I would imagine that's when a lot of things go pear-shaped for kids. And then work out your budget towards that. It's not rocket science. You cannot possibly have an A&E system open from 8 to 8 in County Clare. You cannot possibly have an organisation that is there, was set up for children, that works 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. That's just ridiculous.
It's hard to argue with that, but I guess the counterpoint is, are you going to find it very difficult to expect people to work Sunday nights, you know, middle of the night on a Friday night, you know?
If anybody doesn't want employment, I'm self-employed and I could do with the extra cash, so I'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think by its very nature, crises occur because lives are chaotic, and it often happens during those trigger times, at weekends, after hours, and the supports need to be put in place. I do think, though, that this report will lead to greater cooperation between the Gardaí and Tusla, but getting the systems are working is going to be a challenge. Mm. Plus, I think I acknowledge also that they have very separate functions. The Gardaí are dealing with the crises. Tusla are trying to repair those crises, prevent them from happening, and also bring the family back where they should be, which is together.
Yeah, the other thing that strikes me as well, and we had Chief Superintendent Kerrin in yesterday talking about the Connecting for Life suicide strategy for the region, and he talked about, and to be very fair, he said the Gardaí were here for people who were in distress to reach out, and that they would be there, but we're asking an awful lot of Gardaí with everything else that goes on.
But the one thing, if you bring back community policing, right, this is all happening in the community, right? So and take an old-fashioned approach to it. Like, I'm hugely in favour of what I call old-fashioned policing. Having Gardaí on the beat, on the ground, in the estates, in the urban areas, in the rural areas where this is occurring, right? And they can be part of that prevention rather than cure. Because the it's not just the kids. There's a whole series of strata involved in families in crisis. And they're quite often known to the authorities and known to all the agencies. Listen to the report and implement it quickly. And
hopefully,
you know.
Okay, hopefully this change. We'll be back with more in a moment.
Sorry, Gavin, just before you go, I'd really encourage anybody out there who thinks that this isn't as serious as we're saying it is to go back and look at the Clare Byrne show on the RT player, because this is happening as we speak. 680 children in 2014 were taken by the guards from their families.
It's a huge number.
Mm-hmm. Join the conversation in Clare on Facebook, Twitter, or call 1850 400 964.
You're welcome back to the programme, and our Friday panel is still with me in studio. We're joined this morning by Verena Tarpey from Rape Crisis Midwest, by Martin Waldron of the Craft Workshop here in Ennis, and Orla Vaughan of the Kilfenora Hostel. And yesterday on the programme, we got a massive reaction when we revealed some of the details involved with the expenses that have been paid to Clare County councillors in respect of some of the work they carried out in 2016 and in respect of some of the events that they attended as well. In total, Orla, between what the council paid them and some councillors also getting income from bodies to which they've been appointed, 28 councillors shared 830 odd thousand euro, which is about 29,700 each. You heard from Pat Daly at the top saying that in his view councillors aren't well paid. What's your thought?
What do I think? Here we go. I think, first and foremost, they are well paid. They can have a second income, so that's fine. I think that what brought this up, the 12,500 for...
this was the event in Donegal. In Donegal. The AILG conference, the 20 of 28 and attended.
Yeah, and we were just talking here that out the 20 that went, 20 claimed mileage. So they're not giving a very environmental carpooling.
Well, it's 20... Well, just to be very clear, make sure that we're 100%, it's 20... expenses claims in respect of those attending it, and it was 12,400 odd euro that collectively they were paid.
Okay. And all that, and I do understand people's frustrations, and I was listening to yesterday and I heard you all saying that, you know, when you have the ballot paper in front of you, that you're voting for local people that you've possibly known most your life, you know what they do for a living, so you know that this is an added income on top of it. And then before the 11 o'clock news, you'd people like Mary Howard, who came in of her own accord, who's been awarded an award for her giving of her personal time to a charity that she's very tied to because of tragic circumstances for her. And then she spoke of two other charities that she's involved in. And these public figures, when a charity is struggling, people come to them to ask them, and they don't come to them Monday to Friday, 9 to 5pm. I see them locally. It's a 24-hour, 7 days a week job, 365 days a year. People know where they live. They don't feel anything about calling up to the door because they feel, well, I'm paying you, so I can. You're on my beck and call. So, yeah, maybe it's a lot of money. Is it a job I do not for love nor money? And
but based on what you are,
I know, Martin, I'd vote for myself. Is that allowed?
What is important, and I take Orla's point, I agree, is that these figures aren't suddenly coming out of the sky from Clare County Council. These are standard allowances and payments that are made. Up until a number of years ago, I know that the salary for a local county councillor was much, much lower.
It was free for a long time.
It was. And also the point, I know that Orla spoke about there about people being able to double job. An awful lot of county councillors are full-time county councillors. And I would be of the view that the vast majority of them carry out a very valuable job. I wouldn't do it being doorstepped like a lot of county councillors. And I actually really appreciate the work of my local councillors who work very hard on my behalf in the community. And often I go one step further and say, a lot of them do a thankless kind of job.
But if you flip that around, this is money which we've all contributed to through one form or another, rates or taxes or whatever it may be. I don't think any of us, okay, we might have known this was happening, but I don't think any of us has handed over, say, the property tax and say, well, I'm glad that some of this is going to end up in the back pocket of councillors. We wanted to go for roads, we wanted to go for everywhere else.
Yeah, but don't we want to also to go to wages? Because when it was an unpaid gig, what are you taking? Are you taking a few bob off so-and-so who says, if you get this planning through for me? And sceptics will say, well, maybe that's still going on. But it has to be somewhat paid for. And I agree, the frustration and rates for businesses. And I heard somebody talking about the roads in Kilfenora there during the week in your show, and I'm delighted to see the footpaths have started to be done. So that means the road is coming. So rest on your laurels there. But I'd rather see them getting a wage than doing it voluntarily.
Okay, Martin?
Yeah, listen, I think for the most part, county councils do a good job. I think 16,000 is not a huge amount for what they do in the year. And it probably is the case that the expenses are seen as a way to actually increment that, right? But in this case, if 20 of them went to Donegal and they all drove their cars, right, it isn't environmentally friendly, and it is gilding the lily a bit. But I've seen some of the councils do an amazing job. There's some of them, they're like planks, right? They're not fantastic, but I can think of the, I can think three or four who are outstanding in what they do. I mean, really outstanding. But is it a case that the council are not getting paid enough? Or is it a case that they're getting paid enough and the mileage and the expenses are there just to cover off legitimate costs?
Is it 3 out of 4 to 28, Martin, that you can see, or three or four in your local area?
I'm just thinking of three or four councillors that I think do an outstanding job. Right?
An outstanding, yeah. I can also think
of a number who I think are. I would, if I had a problem, I wouldn't approach them, right?
Yeah.
You know, but I just think of guys that are really, really, if I had an issue, I would go to them and I know that they're going to respond and do something for me.
And it's our responsibility at the next local elections to vote on our feet and vote on those people that are doing work in the community on behalf of us all. We mightn't always be happy with every decision, but that's what the democracy is about. I mightn't be happy with some decisions that are made, but it is our responsibility to vote with our feet and vote the people that are doing the valuable work in.
I'm a bit surprised that everybody's kind of, that you've all kind of taken this tone a little bit this morning, because it's not reflecting what was coming in a text yesterday. And you're all entitled to your views, you're welcome to them. But, you know, do you understand why people are angry?
Absolutely. I totally get it. I was on the panel one time when we were talking about Enda Kenny and his wages. And again, I said pretty much what I've just said now. And you said in the break, you're getting berated on the text messages. And I was like, well, I can't change my mind. And maybe that's because I'm self-employed. And maybe it's because I grew up in a bar. And maybe you're never really off duty. You're always talking to people. And when you're out and about, you have to have the same persona as being jolly the whole time. But we can vote. If you're frustrated and you're angry,
vote for the expenses part.
No, we can't.
We can vote who gets them.
Yeah, yeah. But but it's there in black and white, guys. So if you have a problem with the current crop that are in, and you go down, and it's everything is written. Every penny that they get is written there for what they're getting for. Mm. Go through it, and if you feel it's not justified, go and vote the next time and put somebody else in. There's a fella at home who said, talk is cheap until you're on the mobile. So just vote with your feet.
Okay, fair enough. And if you want to check it out, it's on our website, clare.fm.
Clare FM's Morning Focus with Gavin Grace.
Before that, our Friday panel go this morning, I just wanted to get their thoughts on a piece we heard during the week. We'll start off with yourself, Martin, with regards to cyclists versus motorists. And I hate to word it that way, because the more we have discussions about this topic, the more I fear it's becoming an us against them.
I don't think it's an us against them. My advice to cyclists cycling in Clare would be, where possible, avoid main roads, because it is not a safe and easy thing on main roads in rural environments in Clare with the number of buses we've got, with the heavy traffic and with the speed of cars. What I do tell people is that there is thousands of kilometres of what we call green roads or secondary roads, especially up in North Clare, down around Loophead. Utilise those and you'll have a fantastic experience cycling.
I can tell you, based on experience, you'll have a fantastic experience, but you'll still have plenty of close calls. You will.
If you stay as far away from possible from main roads and primary or secondary roads. Mm. But look, there's a big issue in, look, I'm dealing in a tourist-facing business at the moment, and all the tourists talk about how narrow our roads are, how high the ditches are, how fast bus traffic moves, how they feel unsafe on Irish roads. And because a lot of them are driving on the other side of the road. But from a cyclist point of view, my own kids, I would say, look, guys, don't stay off the main roads, right? Because in this current environment, with the amount of road traffic, with the speed of cars, with the amount of bus traffic we have on our roads, it's not a safe place for cyclists. It's not a case of them and us, right? It's just...
It feels like it gets portrayed that way, though. That's what the point that I guess I'm making.
Our roads were never built for cars or buses. Our roads were built for much smaller, you know, slower mm-hmm. machines than that. And when you look at even Ennis Town or the back roads, which I spent my years on down in West Clare, they weren't built for cars or for buses. They were built for the pony and the trap and the man driving to mass, you know, on a Sunday morning. So 20 cyclists have died in Ireland on the roads over the last 2 years. Yeah. So a lot of road deaths. What has happened, though, is the on-the-spot fines have really increased for cyclists breaking red lights, not having back and front lights on. The statistics from the RSA have 600 cyclists been fined on the spot this year for those offences. So there is two ways of looking at this, but I don't think those roads were built for buses or cars.
What an indictment of the country. Roads aren't for cars. I was going to come to yourself, Orla. Martin was talking about dealing with tourists. You're doing that all the time as well.
Yeah, but I agree with you, Gavin. The more this issue is raised and the more I read about it, it really is becoming them versus us, and which is, I find, quite ironic, because there are very few people that I know that cycle that don't also drive, and vice versa. I disagree with Martin in the back roads. There are serious tractors out there doing silage and doing hay and bringing slurry tanks in the back roads. It is, I just think anybody who gets on a bike is nearly certifiable at this stage. I was going to Galway through the Burn the other day, and I had yourselves on, Gavin, and I was observing the traffic in front of me, because there were quite, not a, a hell of a lot, but there was a, an obvious tourist who was lit up like you'd see from
Christmas tree.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And he had backpacks on the back of his little bike, and he's carrying. And I observed the two cars in front of me really went out of their way to get out of his way and pass him,
and
you know, that
berth.
One and give him a good berth. Mm. And then the next cyclist that we came across was a guy who was obviously local, didn't have a helmet on, was in his shorts and a t-shirt, and barely skimmed him.
Really?
But I couldn't believe it. And I just observed those two instances.
Same drivers?
Same two cars in front of me. And the closeness that they went to the second guy, who was in a t-shirt and a pair of shorts and no helmet, was absolutely, my heart was in my mouth. But the wide berth that they gave to the guy who was very well illuminated with the large packs was what we would expect everybody to be doing on the roads.
I'm finding it hard to think as to why that would be the case.
Because the
first car in front of me was a black Volkswagen, and we were on bends, and they shouldn't have been even contemplating passing this person out, because you're on that tourist route from when you come down the Corker and you're into Kinvara, and it's a fabulous surfaced road, but it is quite bendy. And they went to pass out there and really did a risky pass and over and back, whereas they afforded the other guy the time to get out of the bends, and then when it came to a straight patch, afforded him the space.
And there was nothing in the road that meant they couldn't...
No, and that was just funny. It was so funny that you were on the radio talking about the very topic, and I was looking
That's
at
incredible.
This. Yeah.
Obviously, Clear FM is your number one radio station.
Obviously, that's a great clubs there now, Gavin.
But what I was going to say, in all seriousness, was what's the takeaway from all of this? I mean, what I hope it is that we just, you know...
Can I say three words? West Clare Greenway?
Really?
Get it opened, and that will become your a fantastic cycle resource, walking resource, tourism positive resource. But it that requires all these government agencies to get off their ass and do something outside of the box. It has transformed North Mayo. And when I say transformed, I mean literally transformed it. It would transform cycling as a tourism draw, as a leisure draw in this county, because the West Clare stretches all the way from Ennis down as far as Loophead almost. So get that done.
I'd like to point out that Martin went over his three words.
Thanks very much, Orla.
That was fun. Yeah. Thanks very much. No, we'll leave it there, and we appreciate it. The only thing with that, you'll get rows over money, but anyway.
Surely not.
No.
Well, anyways, can't get to work on the Greenway either.
Multi-agency. I finished on multi-agency.
Multi-agency. We'll leave it there. Verena and Orla and Martin, thanks very much for joining us in the programme this morning. We'll be telling you about the North West Clare Agricultural Show in Ennis Diamond next.
If it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now, 1850 400 964, or email focus@clare.ie. clare.fm.